Man, I hate that about winter, right? You need some
leather.
Vaseline.
It turns into leather.
Yeah, we get all ashy. That's what happens. It's no good. That's the winter thing. Okay. Good morning, everybody. We're off to an amazing start for the day today. We've got lots on the agenda. I've got some funny stuff to talk to you about. We were just discussing Nayib Bukele of El Salvador. In his second term, according to Bitcoin Boot, says he's done because the Constitution says only 8 years. He'll be voted in by the people to do another term or two. Well, you see, if the Constitution says he can't, then you don't want that. You don't want someone breaking the Constitution. Of course, MK want to change the Constitution.
Why, man, listen, when you get a win, just take your win and go home.
14% is not bad. That is better than any other new party has ever achieved in South Africa. But these guys just don't seem very happy with it.
That is such a big W. Take your W and go home.
As someone said to Duduzile, though, a while ago on Twitter, on X, they said, maths is obviously not a big strong suit in your family.
Not at all.
You know, they're not sure.
1,040,000. Listen carefully. 60,000.
All right. I want to play you something that is, I think, one of the most unbelievable recordings ever made. This was recorded at the end of World War One. You know, they signed the armistice, and at precisely 11 o'clock, all guns stopped.
This is 1919.
No, 1918.
18. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So this is the end of the war, and you can actually hear it. So this is a recording that was made on the battlefield in France. I think near Verdun. And take a listen to this, because there's something at the end of this which is heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. You hear the guns and they're going crazy, and then they stop at 11 o'clock sharp, because again, people followed orders, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's silence, but there's a sound right at the end that just made me, oh man, it hit me hard, like right in the solar plexus. Just listen to this.
Oh, my goodness.
Did you hear that? The birds.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being an animal, a bird or whatever, and all of this chaos is going on around you? I mean, not a tree was left standing. Everything was turned to matchsticks, right?
Mm.
These huge big guns, shells exploding all over the place. Imagine being a bird. You don't have a tree to land in. And then suddenly it all goes quiet and you're like, what the hell? And you hear, the first sound you hear after all those guns go silent is that bird song. Just, it breaks my heart. You think about that and you can't relate to it now, you know?
It blows my mind. They legit stopped. At all at the same time.
Yeah.
It like, you know what? We take a lot of things for granted. In 2024, I don't think there's too many people that could have made it through the First World War.
Well,
the people who are alive right now, I don't see too many of us who would have been able to have seen that level of devastation.
Oh my God.
Or be able to follow orders to the point whereby when they say 11 a.m. you stop, people would stop. I don't think so.
I watched the D-Day 80th year celebrations on the weekend. I watched a few of the, you know, the speeches that were made, Biden, King Charles, the French President Macron. And I found it so moving. You've got these 100-year-old men now.
Mm.
You know, these are guys, this is the Second World War, not the first, but because all those guys are already dead.
Yeah.
But these are probably the last living people who have actual experience of what happened in the 1940s, early 1940s in Europe. And it's just, it's an incredible thing to think about the world that they delivered to us and the world they delivered us from.
Yeah.
Because I see a lot of people on online these days talking about war. The one guy said, this old soldier, I mean, he's in a wheelchair and, you know, he's nearing, very near the end of his life because he's really, really ancient. And you think this guy stormed the beaches of Normandy in 1944. And you think about the fact that he might not have made it. He did. A lot of his friends didn't. Mm. And he talks about his experience there. And he says, you know, there's just noise and chaos. And all you're trying to do is not get shot. And you don't know because someone could be aiming a bullet at you. You can't. You're not Superman. You can't dodge a bullet.
Yeah.
So you're just hoping, and you're watching literally as people fall all around you. And he said, "If I had any advice for young people or for anyone who's alive today, don't have a war." He said, "It's a horrible thing. You don't want a war." So
it's pretty insane that you have to say that. Like, don't go to war.
Yeah.
Look, movies do a really good job of, you know, bringing us the closest approximate to what could have possibly happened. But I don't think too many of us realize just how unbelievable those kind of situations are. Anyone that's ever been close to a war-torn area will let you know, like, that it's not fun. And life is not a movie. You're not going to be ducking bullets and all of this stuff. Like, when a genuine bullet is headed in your direction, listen.
You can do.
There's nothing you can do.
There are a lot of comments here about the poor guy who must have been shot at 10:59. But there are stories about those last few minutes of the war where, you know, someone was captured in that last half an hour and they were going to be shot because obviously if, you know, if you captured an enemy and they were hostile, you shot them. Mm. That was the rules of war. And there are stories about people who just made it or people who just didn't. Mm. And it's heartbreaking. In fact, there've been a number of movies that have been made about this too. And it's emotionally devastating to just think about it. Anyway, I thought that recording was amazing. Someone asked in the comments, where did I find the recording? You can find it online. There's so much interesting stuff on the internet. I know we spend most of our time looking for celebrities screwing up or, you know, people doing stupid TikTok dances, but there's actually a lot of amazing, amazing stuff on the internet. And that's why I love it. Hugh G. Rection says, would anyone in the comments section really fight for a country these days if there was a World War III? Would any of us? This is the question, right? And Ronald Reagan, 40 years ago, at the 40th anniversary of D-Day, made a beautiful speech. That's something you should look at online.
Yeah.
If you really want to be inspired. I listened to that over the weekend because Joe Biden made mention of it in his speech. And I thought, wow, I wonder what Reagan said. Ironically, Reagan was 73 at the time he made that speech. And people were already saying he's too old to be president. Mm-hmm. I got Joe Biden at 89, 90 years old. Yeah. And he's a lot older. But anyway, Ronald Reagan's speech, one of the most moving things you will hear. And he asks in the speech, where do we find these men? Where do we find these men who would be prepared to sacrifice everything? And remember, for American soldiers, this was going to a place most of them had never been before, to France, to Europe, to fight in a war that they weren't directly involved in, that they were going to fight for something which was greater than national security, oil, stability, democracy, any of these things. The biggest thing that they were fighting for is they were fighting against a monstrous totalitarian regime that would have forced everyone to speak German. They would have killed a huge percentage of the population who they didn't think were Übermenschen.
Yep.
And I think it takes serious balls and values to be able to decide, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sacrifice my life. I mean, you leave your family behind, you get on a ship, you go to Britain, you're training all the time, you're learning how to fight and use a gun and do things that you've already got the training for in America, but now you're learning to do it for, you know, beach warfare and an attack on the Nazis. And you do all of that, not for money, not for direct rewards. Mm. I don't know where we would find people like that anymore. If we needed men, because it's men, it wasn't women,
yeah,
regardless of what they tell you. If we needed men now to fight a war like that, I don't know if we'd find them.
We would have a tough time. Yeah, we would have to force a couple of people to do it. I don't see too many people just readily lifting their hands to be brought into the fold. I just don't see it.
I don't.
And we I think we oversimplify things. We as people in 2024, I think we just look at situations and think they would be a breeze, or we just simply survive it and whatnot. But the truth of the matter is, more than less of us would die.
Yeah.
Would perish.
Karen says, my mom turned 95 on the 6th of June. Over the years, she's told me about having to go down to air raid shelters and having food rations, etc. Yeah. Mm. That's something I spoke to Kate Turkington about a while ago. She turned 90 not so long ago, and that's something that she experienced. V. Riss says, if Lesotho went to war with South Africa, I'd fight for Lesotho.
They'd need all the help they can get as
oh,
well.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's go to the from the sublime to the ridiculous, right? So this is a clip of Kevin Spacey on Piers Morgan. Did you see this?
Yes, I did.
All right, so you're no stranger to this. There may be people who haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to let you watch this. This is his first major interview since he's been, I think, largely acquitted on all the charges that he was, doing dodgy things and raping people and all kinds of sexual advances that were unrequited. But whatever he's done, take a look at this clip, and I want to hear your thoughts on this afterwards. Join us in the comment section. Like and subscribe if you haven't already, because otherwise you don't get to see this stuff. So take a look at this.
Where do you live now? Well, it's funny you ask that question, because this week, where I have been living in Baltimore, is being foreclosed on. My house is being sold at auction.
Really?
So I have to go back to Baltimore and put all my things in storage.
Really?
So the answer to that question is, I'm not quite sure where I'm going to live now, but I've been in Baltimore for since we started shooting House of Cards there.
So how long is that?
I moved there in 2012.
So this has been your home for 12 years?
Well, not this particular place, but this place has been my home and Evan and Lucy's home since 2016.
Why is it being foreclosed?
Because I can't pay the bills that I owe.
Are you facing bankruptcy?
Been a couple of times when I thought I was going to file, but we've managed to sort of dodge it, at least as of today.
How much money do you have?
None.
Really?
Well, I mean, you have some sense of legal bills.
Yeah.
I still owe a lot of legal bills that I have not been able to pay.
You're actually in debt?
Yes.
Do you mind me asking how much you owe?
It's considerable.
Millions?
Many millions, yes. The house itself is many millions.
What are you going to do?
Get back on the horse.
So Jack is laughing. I mean, I don't know how to feel about this, except that I don't know what's wrong with us as humans that we have to do this to people who are already going through a lot. And there's something really crass and ugly about the way that we, and remember, he's part of this. He's volunteered to be in this interview. So I don't have a huge amount of sympathy for Kevin Spacey personally. I do, when I watch that, feel bad, just because if any of us were in that situation, we would maybe do an even less brave job. I mean, he says he's going to get back on the horse, which is the way that clip ends. I think it ends on a high, because I do believe some people can pick themselves up by their bootstrings and start again. Mm. I just don't know why we have to watch people descend into disaster every time. What is it about us that we need to see this? Why are human beings so shitty that we need to drag everybody out into public spaces? And again, he volunteered to be on this show, so he could have just kept quiet and stayed home. I don't like seeing this. I'm not afraid to admit that I don't like seeing other people in pain and in difficulty and in misery. And yet this is how you get TV ratings.
Yeah.
I'll never understand it. I don't think it's entertainment. Astrophysics says it's entertainment, Gareth. How many people feel like that but can't do anything? Here's what bothers me, is the people who enjoy it, and there are people, a lot of people, who actually enjoy seeing this stuff.
Mm.
There is an element of disgusting base schadenfreude.
Yep.
Where they're actually just watching it and enjoying that person going through pain, because it makes them feel that they're better people.
And it's like this 10-second feeling of feeling better. And the reason I was laughing, Gareth, is not because I don't have any sympathy for Kevin Spacey. The reason I'm laughing is because this has been happening for decades, man.
Yeah.
We'll have someone who will reach the highest heights, abuse their power, and then the very same person will expect us to sympathize with them. It's like, no, Kevin, when you were Kaiser Sose,
yes,
and you were winning Academy Awards left, right, and center, there were no tears.
No.
There were no tears. And we spoke about what he did to some of those men a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And sure, I did put a bit of culpability on some of those victims. But the truth of the matter is, he abused his power. Some people's lives are, they can't fix their lives after that, right? And here he is, a man with, I am sure, multiple properties across the globe, expecting us.
I don't know so much. I think he's telling the truth. I think he's telling the truth about the cost of, hiring
the
lawyers.
The legal fees and whatnot. Yeah,
that's expensive
stuff.
And it doesn't matter. Like, it's none of our business.
It's none of our business.
That he has no money. And I don't feel sorry for him personally. It's not like I would give up my money to help Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, no.
But I think there's something very weird about the rest of us, from Piers Morgan to everybody else who watched that clip. If you take any joy in another person's misery, I think that's weird.
It is
very bizarre.
It is weird. And if that interview, I watched most of it, it was almost a cry for help from someone. Like, it was like watching a giant cry, basically. That's difficult to watch no matter what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's Vincent says, obviously he's being paid so that Piers Morgan could get the ratings, but nothing was asked about the ball grabbing and ass smacking, all for ratings.
See?
Yeah. Listen, I also think people have very complex lives, and they do a lot of stupid shit in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't doubt that if you said to Kevin Spacey, if you could go back and do everything again, would you do it differently? He would definitely say yes, because it doesn't look like that man's in a great place,
mm-hmm.
right? So what do we do as humanity to forgive people? When do we decide we can forgive and forget? When do we decide it's okay to move on?
I think that's the victim's job. Right? If the victims are the ones that tell us, look, we have made peace with this, I think it's okay for everyone else to forgive this person, then cool. But not a moment before. I'm not going to just readily forgive Kevin Spacey because he didn't do anything wrong to me.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care.
See what I mean? The victims, the people that were actually affected by his actions should be the ones to lead us in the forgiveness story.
I think I'm getting closer to the question that I'm actually interested in here, because I don't want to dance around the issue. What I'm interested in is, why is it that people who are unrelated to a situation feel that they have a say in a situation? Okay, so if you weren't abused by Kevin Spacey, you can't be upset on behalf of people who were.
Mm.
You're just inserting yourself into a situation that didn't involve you. Similarly, if you're one of those people who's taking huge pleasure in his misery now, that's not your business.
Yeah, it's not.
It's like we've forgotten what is and isn't our business. Everybody thinks they have a right to be in everybody else's business. From, you know, the good people to the bad people. Like everyone, we were talking about Elon Musk just before the break.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks they have to have an opinion on Elon Musk. And I'm like, why? It's none of your business, actually.
I social media and the internet, because we reward very minimal effort, people think that they actually have, or people want to hear their opinion on a bunch of things. People just, we don't care. And
we love seeing someone fall.
Yeah. That's a human condition. But I mean, and on top of that, I think people who don't have a business of their own, like who don't have things to do in their own lives, will look for other shit in other people's lives to do. It's just the way sad, lonely people are. And if you are getting pissed off about something that happened online that is not connected to you at all, I suggest you find some meaning in your life, find some purpose.
Plant some things in the garden.
You know what I mean? Listen, here's an idea. Do some push-ups. Just do 10. Whenever you feel that urge that you are getting angry and you need to vent on social media about how whoever from across the planet is pissing you off, just do 10 push-ups. I promise you it'll fade. It'll fade.
All right. I mean, I think that's very, it's horrible to see. I don't enjoy seeing any of that stuff. I really don't.
No.
I don't mind seeing the people crying because they are, what did the woman say? Her situation?
Time blindness.
They suffer from time blindness and they cry. That's hilarious. You know what else is hilarious? Is Joe Biden is so old that he was at a concert. They gave a concert for Juneteenth, which is a made-up holiday in America. The Democrats had a big party at the White House. First of all, there are three things you need to look at in this video. Because in it, you'll see Joe Biden, you'll see Kamala Harris, you'll see Kamala's husband, Doug Emhoff, and you'll see like a man in a dress. It could be Michelle Obama. I don't know. But you have to tell me. And you just tell me, like, first of all, is Kamala's husband, Doug, not the whitest white guy ever? Look at how he dances. Is Joe Biden even moving, or is he just frozen solid in this clip? And then who is the man in a dress? Have a look.
Amen.
What a sad video. So,
like,
I think that is Michelle Obama, by the way.
I have never in my life
what a weird seen collection of people.
So many weird contradictions in one video.
It's interesting, like, right? That's interesting.
That is intense. That is insane.
So, first of all, you notice Joe doesn't move at all. It's like, I don't understand. The guy's just, he's dead.
Like,
I think they put him there like a cardboard cutout, and he's like,
what?
Apparently, I think it was Beyonce. Beyonce was on stage or something. I don't know who it was singing, but but clearly Kamala and the man in a dress, they knew the moves. They were like,
yeah, I mean,
and then Doug, Kamala's husband, what an uncomfortable looking dude.
Do you know what's crazy? It looks like all of them are lost in some sort of
weird
moment. And like, Joe Biden is going to be, well, he's still running to be president of the United States. How is this real? How is this? So you're telling, you've got a man in a dress and a wig.
No.
Next to a white. No, it's not Michelle. It's not Michelle. No.
Okay.
A man in a dress and a wig next to some balding white guy.
Yeah.
Next to one of the most.
The first gentleman or the second gentleman. I mean, what a thing to be called.
Next to one of the most annoying human beings to ever walk the planet.
Yeah, but at least in this video, she's the most normal one.
Mamala? Really?
Yeah, Mamala. Ugh. She's all right.
Next to a dementia patient.
With rigor mortis. Yeah.
It's funny. What is going on?
You see, now these are the people. By the way, I must just remind you that in that clip are the two people who are the closest to the nuclear codes.
Oi.
Think about that. They have the nuclear football somewhere near them that can launch thousands of nuclear warheads at a moment's notice. That scares the hell out of me.
Yes, it does. Because if Joe Biden has some sort of World War II flashback, hey, guys, we might be in trouble. Mm.
Anyway, Biden isn't running to run the country. He's just a sick puppet for BlackRock, says Congo Chris. There's some conspiracy theories coming along. Wentz says Joe has some form of Parkinson's. He seems frozen. Well, Parkinson's, you move.
You move.
You don't, you're not frozen, I don't think. He had men in dresses at the White House a few months back, says Bitcoin Boy, some tranny get together. It goes to show just how shit the USA is. They're unable to come up with better offerings than Joe Biden and Trump, says Joking Atheist. Yeah.
Ah, man.
Unreal, huh?
It is unreal. You know, like,
this is the world we live in.
It's funny. You think to yourself, the world can't get crazier, and then they just keep rolling this stuff out. They
it's
keep
wild.
Rolling it out.
It's wild.
At the beginning of the year, I thought to myself, Trump making those golden sneakers would be a headline. But look,
it's nothing.
It's nothing. It is nothing.
No, it's crazy. The pale, stale white man club just got taken, black man lady. Got token black
token,
man lady,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, listen, if you watch that and you don't find it interesting, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, you're not.
It's pretty weird.
It is.
That's
so
the
weird.
Kind of stuff that passes for the leadership of the free world now. So get ready, everybody. We're in for a hell of a ride.
Yeah, we are.
Speaking of being in for a hell of a ride, it's time to talk to Nicholas Regisford, who I love talking to. He's put on a show that we're all going to be at on Friday and Saturday. It is going to be, I think, for people who are interested in podcasting, probably the thing to get to. It's called the South African Podcast and Music Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, in today's digital age, storytelling has found a new and vibrant platform through podcasting. We've been doing that for 10 years here, but there are a lot of people who've just got into it now. And for anybody who's starting off, you want to find out who the people are that you can learn from.
Yeah.
You want to go and hear what they have to say. You want to see what they have to teach you. And this is what Nicholas has decided to put together. So he's given us three reasons that you should consider diving into podcasting as a business. Do you want to hear those?
I would love to hear those.
We can ask him about them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really good show. It's a prime example of the growing enthusiasm for podcasting in South Africa. The upcoming event promises a wealth of knowledge and networking opportunities for aspiring and seasoned podcasters alike. So I'm going to be speaking there. We got Simia Ref. We got Penwell, the Black Pen. We got Paulo Diaz, Brendan Spike Ballantyne, who was one of our producers for a while at Cliff Central. Lebanjo Sana, who of course you know from Cliff Central too. John Savage will be there too. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes,
and
sir.
Of course, the guy behind it all is Nicholas. How are you, sir?
Oh, man, I'm so happy. I'm really happy to be here. To be here and to hang out with you.
Good. Like, great to see you.
The pioneer, the game starter. You started
fire starter.
The game.
Arta. So listen, it's 2 days, 14, 15 June at Emperor's Palace. And we'll tell people how to get tickets if they want to come along. But I mentioned just now, what are the three reasons people would want to get into podcasting? So what do you think those are, Nick?
I think people have got a chance to tell unique stories, authentic stories. to take out things that deeply inside they are burning with, mm-hmm. And to create a story and reference for their presence on the earth. Mm. I think people are saying podcasting now gives me an opportunity to be global, gives me an opportunity to reach more people,
right.
Gives me an opportunity to be recognized, and gives me an opportunity to maybe just get stuff off my chest. So there's more than three reasons, but I've tried for publicity purposes. Okay, well, packaging to bring it down. So
I like these three. I mean, the first one you've hinted at with reach and influence, because everybody's looking to share, but they also want other people to acknowledge that they're adding value.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone has a podcast these days.
Yeah.
But some of them have an audience.
Right.
Some do not. Mm. And you want a podcast that has an audience so that you know that what you're saying is having an impact.
Right.
That's all. Right. Otherwise, you might as well be talking to yourself in your room at home.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
The other thing is creative freedom. So the nice thing, and one of the reasons I got into it, and I suspect this is also why you guys both like it so much, is that you have the ability to say what's on your mind. You could talk about anything you like. You can be controversial. You can speak honestly and openly.
Mm.
And of course, you're going to get a lot of people who disagree with you. You get a lot of people who love what you're saying. Mm. And then the third one is monetization. Now, that's a lot harder, right, Nick?
Well, unfortunately, people put that thing before the purpose.
Yeah.
So I had a conversation and wrote an article about, you know what? Deliver value before you focus on the purse.
Yeah.
Even if you can smell the purse, what is your value proposition?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Who are you doing this for? And if that's genuine and not something that you're creating a podcast out of because you think it's a good business idea,
right.
I think you got more chance to win. So money, for me, is the third thing. You get the token of appreciation once you've added value and you've been authentic and you've been consistent and you've contributed to the game. And in essence, that's my whole approach even right now. Mm. Like, I'm not expecting money right now. I'm just blessed that we got it. Yeah, thank you to the Department of Arts and Culture.
Oh, wow. Mm. Okay, well done to them. That's one of the few things they've done right.
Shout out to them. Shout out to them.
But I like what you're saying. And, you know, I never take this audience of ours for granted, by the way. I mean, you heard in the comments this morning, just after we started the show, someone who's been listening for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's someone else who said they'd been here for a very long time. Listen, I couldn't do what I do, and it wouldn't matter if I didn't have the audience that we have.
Yeah.
So I get up on a cold winter's morning, and I'm like, what am I doing this for? It isn't for the money.
Right.
It shouldn't be. Can't be.
And if it was, I think I would have stopped a long time ago, because there isn't that much money in it,
mm-hmm.
just doing shows.
Mm-hmm.
What it is about creating essentially a tribe, a community, and being able to, that value that you talk about, being able to bring people in so they can hear about stuff that our clients are into, that they're into, that we can make them meet somewhere, that they can exchange value themselves, whether it's their time, their effort, their money, whatever it might be. That's special. And that was never possible before at this scale.
Yeah.
You had to own a big media company. You had to be, you know, a CBS, ABC, HBO, any of the other SABC. You had to have like the acronym behind you before you could do that before. So things have changed, and I think it's a great thing that
it is.
Changed.
And you know, for some of us, it's about growing, and not. I'm not speaking about your audience. Mm. It's about, as an individual, understanding that you don't live in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people with different opinions to you. There's a lot of space for you to grow and learn, because there isn't a single person that has all the information in the world in their head.
Right.
So we have to share it.
Right.
And using the technology that we have now, being the ability for you to put out a message and reach millions of people is what genuinely excites me about what we do on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I think archiving is also something that I think is important. You
it's
know,
a time capsule. Yeah,
archiving
you're right.
stories, archiving times, archiving opinion, archiving and documenting the moments.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in this communication game for a long time. 2 decades.
Yeah.
And the number one thing that I've learned by talking to radio people right now about podcasting, because I go everywhere with my phone and I ask questions, right?
Yeah.
Is like, oh, you're uncensored. That's why I love podcasting. right? So it's uncensored. Like this restriction that comes with platforms that are governed by money, directors, boards, and all this sort of thing.
Traditional media.
And rules.
It squashes people's creativity and sense of like really what they want to do.
Yeah.
So they don't bring themselves fully.
Mm.
With podcasting, you'll see that people here in Africa are bringing themselves fully. And they really want to win. So that's what I'm excited about. And I want to contribute positively to this game. I want to join the space that Gareth started more than 10 years ago with good value.
I mean, this is also why I'm really happy to be talking at your festival, because, I mean, you're not going to pay me, so I could say no.
Right.
but it's also important to give back and to talk to the people who might be the next generation in doing this, people like Jack, you coming along. But what I love is I met you in, I think, two different ways. The first time I met you was through your wife, Liz, who people who've been listening to Cliff Central for a long time will remember, Liz Ogumbo Regisford, who did the fashion show, right? They did a show on Cliff Central.
Fashion Lab,
that's it. And I also met you probably around about the same time through DJ Spoo. I can't remember which came first. That's why I brought up both. Right. But you and DJ Spoo have been working together for a long time, and he's always been a real forward thinker. I mean, I know he's done podcasting, he's done radio, he's done the in-taxi radio station. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. And Spoo is one of those people who's also, you know, not content to just sit and do things the same way. So he's also involved in this, is he?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. We're brothers. We're business partners and brothers.
Right.
You were at my house with Touch and Spoo, and we had Massive Metro. You had Cliff Central, and he had Touch HD. We had a game-changing concept that we didn't do. We were going to have one rate card and sell that rate card to the industry. We didn't do it. I don't know why, Jack. I don't know why, but respect to Gareth.
I have my suspicions, but I'll keep that to myself.
Because he's still here, and everybody plays a role in developing the game.
Yeah.
So this part here is now an evolved version of that. I started working with Spoo in 2013 on Leadership 2020.
Right.
And we met to develop leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how old you were in 2013, right?
14 years old.
Right. So now you're 27. So at 14, you wouldn't have gotten into that event. But there were people like maybe 5 years older than you, 20, 21, 22, that came into that event who have now gone and blown up, came into that movement and have now gone and blown up. So with podcasting and music, the festival, the idea is to do the same thing, create a family, right? Bring you in, give you knowledge from those who've got it, who are willing to give. We believe that with our work and our ethos and our approach to doing development of people, education first, networking second, entertainment third. And, you know, we do things in threes. It's public relations and comms, right?
Right.
But, you know, three things.
There's a strategy here.
Listen, man, I'm a master strategist.
I love it.
Tell them, right? Tell them, Gareth. Yeah. He's a master strat. Anyway, listen, the reality of what we're doing is taking people who are hungry for knowledge, bringing them to a meeting of note, and leveraging our relationships in the game to create something sustainable. How are we going to make money from it? We will see later.
Yeah.
How many people are going to come to the event? We will see later. But what we can guarantee is that the knowledge and the information and the intent is big and beautiful.
It reminds me of a movie back in the day, Build It and They Will Come.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right. That's it. That's exactly it.
You either take Muhammad to the mountain or you take mountain to Muhammad, right?
Yeah.
So how's podcasting doing in this country? Do you have any feel on that? Because I speak to people all the time. They ask me, how do I get into podcasting? And frankly, I don't know the answer to that. All I usually say to them is you've got to do something either that you do better than anyone else.
Or be the only one doing it.
Or be the only one doing it.
Yeah.
And there's space, right? I mean, there are people who have podcasts on fishing.
Absolutely.
And there are like, I don't know, 200 people who are listening to that every week.
Right.
But if you're a business that sells fishing tackle, that's the show to be on.
Right. Exactly.
You don't waste your money trying to reach 6 million people.
Right. Exactly.
If you can reach the 200 people who are going to buy your stuff.
Exactly.
So there's value in that. But podcasting has grown. I remember going around 10 years ago and telling people, and half the people didn't know what it was.
Right.
They're like, what?
Right.
Obviously, podcasting's older than 10 years. It's been around since probably I'd say the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
But a lot of people only caught on around 2010, somewhere around there. Right. And now I'd say most South Africans know what a podcast is. Yeah. I mean, now podcasts are like ours. This, we call this a podcast, but it's visual. We do it for YouTube as much as for everything else.
Yeah.
So it's changing as we speak. Yeah. And, you know, we're using lots of new technology and doing things a bit differently here. Yeah. But where do you think it's going?
So you asked the question, how's it doing? And then where's it going? And I'd like to start with how's it doing. I think it's dangling a massive carrot in front of people. And people are trying to decide, how do I get in? What do I make my set look like? But Gareth does it like this. And Penua looks like that. And Spoo looks like this. Yeah. And they get overwhelmed and flustered. And then they don't start.
Mm.
Yeah. That's right. You actually got to get off your ass and start it.
So take your phone, right? Record the interview with Jack. Mm-hmm. Post it.
Start. You're done.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's dangling a massive carrot. And what we need to do is be clear on what it is. So what is a podcast? Is a great question. Because some people don't do video. Some people do TV. Some people are just about audio. I met a radio producer the other day who said, listen, video is not going to last, but audio lives longer and it's better.
Mm.
And I can quote Gareth saying back in the day, audio is something you can do while you're doing other things. You do it yourself. Yeah, you do it uniquely. Gareth, man, you've dropped so many gems that I just got them in my Gareth. My Gareth.
I don't even remember some of these.
But you were at the event talking about this at Regenesis and you said, listen, we're doing this thing because it's a space where, you know, you either have your niche or you're growing an audience to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that podcasting presents a unique opportunity for people to decide what they want to do with it. I'm not making a podcast yet. I'm just making TikTok videos, and I will not call that a podcast.
Mm.
The Congo Chris says in the comments here, the unique selling point for this show is the interaction with a belligerent comment section, which is right. I mean, credit where credit is due. The comment section keeps us on our toes, that's for sure.
Where's it going?
No. Yeah, where's it going? So that's the follow-up question, because I don't know the answer to that. Everybody thinks that, you know, people who are doing it will know where the next step is. We don't really. We've got to gamble a little bit. So you bet on it going in this direction, and then it does.
Yeah.
Maybe you bet wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know all the answers.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's about placing your bet. That's the most important thing. You have to place your bet.
It's like that for every business, right?
Yeah.
If you're in insurance, or you're in the medical business, or you're in selling cars, you kind of have to throw a line out and hope that you catch something.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that businesses, everything's worked out, right? There's rooms full of smart people who come up with all the answers and they just know. Mm. And, oh, well, obviously they knew this was going to happen. I mean, if that were true, there would have been people who bought Amazon shares when Jeff Bezos first started it that would be multi-billionaires now.
Yep.
But there aren't. There was just him who believed in it for the longest time. So I suppose you've also got to trust yourself.
Man, no one believes in what you're doing when you start.
No.
Like, no one cares.
No.
Right? So you just got to be bold. Mm-hmm. You got to get up and walk. And actually, Gareth is spot on, because he's saying, you just got to see where it takes you. Right? Bring it authentically. Bring it as if no one pays you for it, you will still bring the same passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah?
And you don't know if it's going to work. I mean, like, this could be a disaster. there are a number of times I thought, and I think this is true for anybody. If you're listening to me now and you're thinking, yeah, that's true for me too. Good, because then you know what I'm talking about. Whatever your business is, at some point you're lying in bed at night and you're like, oh, hell, I don't know if this is going to work. Yeah. I better have some plan Bs, Cs,
What do you mean lying in bed? You're waking up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
With like, oh, man, what am I doing? Yeah, why am I doing this?
Throbbing headache, and you're like, what the hell? What stupid decisions did I make? How did I get to this?
It's 3:14 in the morning. You don't have anything to do until 8. And like, your business has woken you up.
Yeah.
Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a great thing.
Okay. So what do you do with that when you've woken up and you can't sleep? Where do you transfer that energy? Because believe me, this journey has been long.
It's funny you bring this up, because Jack said to me in the kitchen while we were making a cup of coffee this morning before we started the show.
Yeah.
I said to him, he poured something. It wasn't coffee. It wasn't alcohol. It was like an energy drink.
Yes.
I said to him, rough night. And he's like, no, I didn't sleep.
I couldn't get any sleep. I couldn't get any sleep. Like, and the same thing happened on Monday evening because I had a show on Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
There's a level of excitement. There's I wouldn't call it anxiety or nervous energy or anything like that, but I just I genuinely love doing this. I can't imagine myself doing anything else besides what I'm doing right now. Second.
Then you've probably got a better feel on it than anyone else. I mean, that's a good place to start. If you hate what you're doing, I mean, we've all had jobs that we really didn't like, yeah. Right? I was a waiter for one night and I was so shit at it. Nick, you have no idea. So I was a waiter for one order. It wasn't even one night. I served one guy at one table and I fired myself. I was like, I'm not doing this. So I realized like the services industry is probably not for me.
Yeah.
The hospitality, you know, that's not my thing. But there are certain people who are really meant to do certain things. You know, when you see someone who's just doing, they're just flying.
Yeah.
And you think that person's in the right job.
Yep.
And then that might be for some people to be doing podcasting. It might be, to sell, I don't know,
it's
packages in HR. Mm. Who knows?
Waking up out of excitement is fine. Waking up worried is not fine, right? So as you grow and you develop and you produce and bring things to the earth, some people refer to it like bringing birth, right? So I'm birthing a podcast and music festival.
Right.
Yeah. I have to make people feel confident and comfortable that it's going to be worth their time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm risking relationships. I'm spending a lot of time that I could be doing on something else, taking a risk, right? That's the beautiful thing about it. And then what happens is that you just have to just build the momentum and go with the flow. Don't fight it. Keep pushing. Do your best with the time you've got. I spoke to my mother. She told me something so beautiful. Just carry on, push the boat out and pray. That's all she told me.
Mm.
Push the boat out. And I literally am just doing that.
Tell me,
pushing it out.
Hold on, Jack. I want to give the audience the benefit of getting to know Nick a little bit
better.
Thank you, sir. Because we've got a bit of time here. Tell us a little bit about you before I met you and before DJ Spoo and leadership and all that stuff. Where are you from? What's your background? Give us a little insight.
Thank you for doing the interview back to front.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we're such seasoned broadcasters that this platform allows us to just do it any way we want. And there's no one saying to him, listen, why are you doing this way?
Exactly.
So this is where we're at. I was born in Zambia.
Uh-huh.
I'm over 45. I'm 20 plus years working in South Africa and Africa. I consider myself a music media marketing expert. Right. I've been working in radio production, TV production, branding, starting companies. I've been in retail. I'm involved in agriculture. I don't want to go on because it sounds like you're gloating.
I love it. This is what we want to hear.
But my purpose and my passion right now is to develop people. But it started with broadcasting. So in 1999, I was the executive producer at YFM with Fat Joe, and we changed the game. We did Zoo morning radio in a way that Gareth was proud of us. He didn't tell us, but he was proud of us. We learned about Gareth because he was the shock jock on 5. Fat Joe and I went on and did a TV show together with Sammy Sabiti called The Fat Joe Show.
I remember it.
I fell out with Fat Joe because we got big heads and we were young.
Right.
He said to me one day at the Hyatt Hotel, like, listen, man, I don't think you can work with me anymore. At that time, I was like, okay, cool. What you going to do? Right. So you go on and you hustle and you look. Luckily, my sister was here working at Mnet. She introduced me to Metro FM. I went in, had an interview, met Romeo Kamala, who was the boss. Next minute, I'm producing Glenn Lewis Afternoon Drive Time Show.
Okay.
Boom. National platform. Boom.
Nice.
From YFM. Boom. So what, Joe? Boom, let's do the journey, right? Let's go, right? So now look, right? And funnily enough, Joe and I are so tight today. We're working on business and construction projects right now across the continent. And we're doing other things than broadcasting, which is the beauty of it. But he brought me here from England, where I was working and studying in the media and communication space. I was interning at BBC, picking up phones, trying to get into the BBC, I have a degree in media and communications. I've always been interested in content. I started as a producer, but I'm good for the mic. I know how to do it. I've been waiting for my time.
Yeah, yeah, no.
The man's in flow.
Yeah.
This is all very cool because it gives a little bit of insight into who you are.
Background, but, yeah.
Yeah, I love this. And you, as you said, you're creating something brand new here, which is taking place. You've made it happen. You gave birth to this thing. Well done.
Thank you.
You call it the podcast and music festival. So what's the music part?
Well, music
we spent
is,
a lot of time talking podcasts. What about the music part?
But that's the intention. And yeah. I love it because every place I go and we talk about this, we spend 80% of the time talking about podcasts. And then, oh, yeah, the music thing? Tell me about that. How is that fitting in? So basically, when we put out this messaging, we have been getting responses like crazy from people who want to participate. Why? Because they trust us.
Okay.
Of the database that we've got, more than 60% of it is musicians who want a platform.
Okay. Mm.
20% podcasters. The rest of them are people who are interested in coming. Maybe they're curious, they want to buy tickets, or they want to exhibit and sell their food or whatever it might be.
Right.
So I'm interested in the detail and the data that's coming in. So the music component is day two. Day one is podcasting. So on day one...
God, I hope I'm on the right day.
Listen, man, we need you to spin some tunes. Like, we don't know, I'm joking.
No, but I saw you having like a party on the Saturday.
Yeah. Thank you. So there's four parts to it. Podcast masterclass on Friday. In the breaks, aspiring musicians will perform.
Great.
That's right? Awesome. On the showcase stage, right? Mm. Part of the sentiment of putting people on, right? Mm-hmm. In the evening, DJ Spoo and friends will DJ. You'll go home, hopefully not too much consumption, and come back the next day, right? At 11 a.m. Right. And at 11 a.m., we do a music masterclass. And we've partnered with the music arena from Arena Holdings. And now that's Gallo, Anto Stella, and that crew, Quella. And we're going to be doing a whole display of music. DJ Cleo will be there. Robot Boy will be there.
Fantastic.
DJ Arch Jr. will be there. Mm. And we'll be doing a music masterclass, which is a keynote presentation from the music arena. If you don't know who the music arena, and if you don't know who Anto Stella is, she's 40 years in the game. Mahotella Queens, Lucky Dube, like veteran. Mm. Now, we are bringing her to the table, just like we're bringing you, on the value of our relationship with each other,
right?
To be able to help people like Jack. Sorry, Jack, man, you're such a subject here.
It's fine.
Like, we keep talking. We just keep coming like this to help people.
He did try to get a ticket off of me, and I sent you the email, and you said, sure.
Listen, man, Jack, you need 5 tickets.
Look, I'm actually covered, by the way. I am covered. You guys think you're the only ones that are connected. I'm connected myself, okay?
Okay,
I've
bring
got
it.
Tickets for Friday and Saturday.
Bring it.
And
all right. So listen, I want to give people the details because we're running out of time here.
Yeah.
By the way, there's somebody here. Sanella says, please, can we get Fat Joe as a guest? Will you hook us up? I haven't got his number anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Hook us up. I got to get him on. Okay, Sanella said, that'll be a show and a half. So 100%. We'll get him on.
Dynamic.
So where is it and how much and when and what must people do? Where do they go for tickets?
Okay, let's start with the back, right? Podcastandmusicfest.co.za.
Very good. That's, you're selling the tickets yourself so you don't use anybody else.
Thank you very much, Gareth. Right. You know how it goes, man.
Yeah,
like,
no,
go
that's
to
good.
Our website.
You
and
don't
I hope
have to give
you...
up like 40% of the ticket price to someone else.
I hope that you trust us and that's where you go to learn about this event and our movement and our family and what we're about. All the speakers are there. The
it's
lineup
a great
is
website,
there.
By the way.
Oh, Podcast and
Wendy,
Music
did you hear
Fest.
Them say it's a great website.
It's a great
podcast and musicfest.co.za.
Podcast and musicfest.co.za. 600 rand, buy one, get one free. So buy one and bring a friend.
Nice.
Great. That gets you in for the 2 days, both events. Mm. So you buy the ticket at 600, you can go for 2 days with a friend, right? Because the idea is to bring you in,
or
not to make
you're
profit.
Interested in podcasts, they're interested in music.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the things. And it's happening at the Red Roman Shed. Emperor's Palace. It's not happening in a conference venue. It's not happening in a venue with those carpets, man. Yeah. And like those chairs and like the conference food. Mm. Nah, none of that. Yeah. I think you're going to be like, when I see you on Friday, Gareth, I think you're going to be happy about what we are intending to do with this.
I'm the never creativity. Happy, so let's not count our chickens. I know.
Let's make Gareth happy.
I'm going to be driving to the East Rand. I'm going to be driving to Emperor's Palace going, why did I say yes to this? And then I'll love it once I'm there, but on the way there I'm gonna be like, just don't talk to me until I get there. When
actually,
I get there I'll be like,
to you until
wow,
you're
Nick
done.
Look at this is amazing. But up to then I'm gonna be like, oh, why did I say yes to this Friday, the last thing I want to do.
I love your honesty, man. I'm looking forward to your 30-minute session on whatever you're going to talk about.
I still haven't decided.
I was speaking to Simi about the running order.
You've got 2 days.
Yeah,
I was speaking to Simi about the running order, and then next to Gareth Cliff is just empty, but everyone else has got a section, right? Everyone else has got a title, right?
Yeah. Sorry.
Next to Gareth Cliff is empty. Simi says to me, so what's Gareth going to be talking about? I say, it's up to Gareth. He says, why? I said, because he's Gareth.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I think
you've earned the right to,
you're damn right. Pressure.
Do as you please.
I'm absolutely excited. I think you've got some great speakers there. I see you've got Lebang involved, who we love. You've got Simi Aref, who I spoke about just a moment ago. You spoke about Penwell Mlotra, who we love. So it's going to be good.
Double Dr. Tebe Ikhalafeng will give the opening plenary.
Tebe Ikhalafeng, I haven't seen him in ages. He's
doing
amazing.
The opening talk.
He's amazing.
He's passionate about brands and why we as podcasters and storytellers and creators have got a job to build Brand Africa. The list is long. Podcastermusicfest.co.za. We've thrown a lot in.
Basically,
that's it, man.
Basically, Nicholas has gone through his entire phone list and pulled all the people that he can... a strong arm into this,
you know,
and they're all in,
you know.
I love it, and he's doing it for you, so buy your tickets, god damn it, don't be so ungrateful.
Thanks, G.
Podcast and musicfest.co.za if you're interested.
Hope to see you guys there.
Awesome. And Jack will make an best star appearance, sitting in the front row.
On both days. By the way, I'm waiting for the after party on Saturday.
Okay.
Nice.
That's the talk we want.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
It's so lovely to see you, and love to Liz.
Thank you.
I owe her a call. She messaged me the other day and she's like, when can you talk? And I said, about an hour, and then I never called her. So tell her I apologize.
Absolutely. We'll do.
And we'll get together after the event and party.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll let me into the industry, because you know you're a captain. Let me in, man.
Of course.
Let me in. Yeah, let me play.
The gatekeeper.
Yeah, we've got to open up the industry, because I'm holding it back. I'm the one. Okay, I love it. Thank you, everybody. We will see you on Friday morning live from 6 o'clock. But there's also a burning platform tomorrow on the podcast party with Pumi Mashiho. Of course, on Friday, we'll have Simpiwe, we'll have Ben, and we've got lots of exciting stuff happening. So don't miss any of that. Got a busy week. And then, of course, Nicholas's show at the podcast and music festival. All of that is happening in the next 3 days. Ciao. We'll see you later.